Every entrepreneur has been there. Growing pains
obstacles make you
growth
stronger.
Gains.
It's the challenges that cause us to level up.
I'm your host, Alicia Dominico.
The other thing is just making sure you're continuously providing value to your contact base, because it's an agreement, right? It's a handshake where it's, we're allowed to contact you because we provide value to your inbox. And the second you're not doing that anymore, that's the second your emails are not going to be read.
Here's a situation. Email marketing is much more regulated by anti-spam laws than it was originally. But your company still wants to grow and needs to increase awareness and connection without losing touch or relevance with the community that you want to stay close to. But it's an uphill battle. Your customers don't want their inbox cluttered, and they don't want to go to your website. So how do you make sure that you're not seen as spam? If you get marked as spam, your ROI is gone. So you're just grinding, foot on the gas, pushing out content to an audience who's getting more and more agitated about having to listen to you. What's the fix? Let's dig into that in this episode. This episode of the Company Growth Podcast is sponsored by Answer Connect. Answer Connect is a 24/7 live call answering service that ensures your customers get the answers they need from a real human voice. Did you know that 80% of people will end a call if they reach voicemail? Answering all those calls could be the difference between gaining a client or losing a customer. When you're busy, you don't have time to answer all those calls, but revenue could be slipping through your fingers. Think of this as amazing for people like plumbers who are out there on the road and they don't really have time to answer and schedule the next appointment. So that's where Answer Connect is an amazing use case. Partner with Answer Connect and you'll have access to 24/7 customer support specialists. So even in the event of an emergency, you have people ready to help your callers when they need you. Visit answerconnect.com/CA to find out more.
There are so many platforms that you can reach your customers on. There's almost too many. And maybe it's a little bit like we're splitting the vote by having so many different efforts that are going on. And it's really hard to get visibility on which ones are working. Here's another challenge, and that's that sales cycles are taking longer. So you can't just expect that 1-7 touch process that you've been using is going to keep working to close those customers in the same manner that you've been doing. In a time where there is great economic uncertainty, it's very difficult for companies to commit their budgets to you right now. That means you can expect everything is going to be delayed and your deals are going to get pushed. That's the kind of pressure that the sales team is facing, but what about your marketing teams? In the good old 2017 days, you could create a ton of content and be assured that you would get website hits coming through for that content. It's not enough anymore. Now you have to set up a deep strategy for your search engine optimization. You have to be planning for what content you're going to be creating and what the best format for that is going to be and how you're going to reach your audience to make sure that that content fits for that audience to even pull them in the first place. As a growth strategy manager for Tangible Words, Megan Osler knows the pressures that companies are under to hug their customers closer to them now.
Hi, my name is Megan Osler. I am a growth strategy manager.
Meg works directly with our clients at Tangible Words to help them grow by improving their marketing and sales efforts. There's no set playbook anymore, so she has to get creative and tailor solutions to their unique needs.
Everything's changing so quickly in terms of how people are using the internet, how people want to be contacted, how you market to different audiences. And so I feel like that's always going to change in many ways. Like a digital marketing and inbound marketing is always changing, always coming up with new kind of strategies, ideas about how people want to be prospected to, how to gain leads, how to convert leads. And then B, it's not a set rule for every company, you know. B2B businesses, tech businesses, e-commerce sites, all of those, it's going to be incredibly different for each one. And even within those subsets, I think businesses need different things to grow.
One of the things that we realize in doing our process map work that we've been doing for a lot of our clients is that the only thing that is set in this day and age is that progression piece, where the four progressions that every single company has, like you will always have no contact with somebody and then go into a contact in your CRM, that first progression. And then the second one is you will always have contacts in your CRM who don't have a deal open with you yet.
The third progression, which is now you have a deal open, but that doesn't mean it goes to revenue closed one. And you may have customers, but that doesn't mean that you have, you know, you're actualizing that 80-20 rule, which is 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your customers. So you're reselling to them, which is progression four. And I think understanding that structure of those four progressions that every single company has allows you to actually have more control over the marketing efforts that you're doing. Because you realize that if I'm doing this email, it's not for everybody in my CRM. It's actually for that second progression of they're in my CRM, so I can email them, but they don't have a deal open with us or they're not a customer, and really understanding how to segment those lists. Can you speak into a little bit about that segmentation work that you've been doing for understanding that not everybody's at the same stage in the journey and how you can have that level of control?
Yeah, as you've said, understanding those four progressions within your business is going to be that constant. When you get those segmentations like that, it helps you determine your audience better. And, you know, we use those process maps to kind of help figure out what those properties are going to be, talking specifically in terms of HubSpot, you know, can build out then what those properties are going to be and how to segment those audiences within your CRM, right? And then you can get really granular, which is interesting, right? People who are being retargeted, people who are aware of your company but aren't necessarily contacts. Those are going to be two very different people that you can't write the same stale marketing email to. You know, they need different things. They have different wants. And it just makes it a much more effective email marketing strategy specifically to be able to kind of target and segment those different contacts in your CRM. Because, you know, we have clients who come in and they have thousands upon thousands of contacts, but they're trying to get us to do lead generation. Well, lead generation is all well and good, but if you can't sell to who's already in your CRM, that are people who you have the right to be contacting, who want to hear from you, who are aware of your company, then you're missing out on the greatest opportunity to close deals.
That opportunity is why it's so important to prevent or reverse CRM, customer relationship management, rot. This email list is supposed to be an asset, but we have a lot of contacts who maybe haven't heard from you, who missed an email, who are unengaged and getting suppressed, or simply have moved on and chosen somebody else. How do you beat back that fear of wanting to reach them and catch them before, but also not wanting to kind of annoy them by being in their inbox too often? We already know that marketing takes that funnel shape of a triangle, where if you're not getting tons of traffic, it's really hard to get the percentage of conversions that are going to come off of your traffic. And then you even see a greater drop-off towards those that actually become customers. Every drop-off is huge, and every drop-off matters. But if you're not tracking these things, how can you possibly know what to optimize? Or what are the efforts that you're doing for each of these levels of traffic generation, to traffic conversion, to conversion from lead to customer? So we know we have to keep sending emails, but what? We're just supposed to let go of not seeing an ROI? Measurement is critical to getting a return on investment, but it's not as simple as we'd like. What is the right data to be tracking? And how do you segment correctly? How do you analyze the efforts for each team that they're doing to understand if it's working? And here's something else that both teams have to do. Maybe they haven't always had time for when the going was good and the money was pouring in and the deals were closing more quickly and the leads were coming in through reliable systems. But now you need to spend time analyzing what is and isn't working for you as you try these new efforts. As soon as you can catch your breath, I recommend everybody does this. Because as you look to optimize which efforts you can drop and which ones you just improve to make better, that is the gold. All of these things we do in marketing only matter in so much as we can track and test and then spend time improving them. It's easy to come up with new ideas and new efforts. What's harder is to stop and be like, did that work for us? How could we make it just 1% better? In order to get data to analyze and optimize your efforts, you need to experiment. Megan has been working on a monthly e-newsletter for one of our clients. It started with deep segmentation based on lifecycle stage and proven engagement of those people. And then we did 3 trial newsletters. Now it's been running for 19 months straight. But it doesn't look the same as it did 19 months ago.
We have over $11,000 worth of influence revenue, and we have 10 plus deals attributed revenue from this newsletter. So what remains really exciting about this marketing strategy is how much we've been able to iterate on it. It's a system that allows us to quickly test what works, discard what doesn't the next month, bring new ideas in for segments and to make it more multimedia focused. I feel like we're always laughing about this, but accidentally once we sent it out at 10 p.m. instead of 10 a.m. just because it was like, oh, well, let's see what happens. And it was the best read rate of all time. And, you know, I don't think we've necessarily gone back to sending it out at late in the evening, but it is really interesting to see that, right, in terms of sometimes it's surprising what works and you never know what's going to work until you do it.
And track it.
Absolutely. HubSpot is invaluable for that in terms of you know exactly why it's working. And again, iterating in really small ways where you're changing the variable so you know what the variable that is kind of pushing that read rate.
And one of the things that you achieved with that campaign was, you know, getting out a newsletter every month is actually a really hard thing for most organizations to do, most small and mid-sized companies. You need to have dedicated people who are doing it. You need to have really good communication across the company for what are the things we're putting in it. You need to have a content strategy so you know what buckets of content you need to fill in that newsletter. And of course, you really want people to stay engaged with it. So you need to be analyzing it and testing things to make sure that you are not saying things that aren't interesting to them, because otherwise that whole effort is wasted. But I think, you know, there are some newsletters that I read all the time consistently. And if I don't have a chance to read them that day, they stay in my inbox until I can process them. And I hope that a lot of the content that the really good e-newsletters are still doing that. So all of this naysaying about email marketing and newsletters being very successful is kind of off base, because the ones that are doing it well and keeping it fresh and testing and trying and tracking, they're doing a great job of it, and they can see when they get bad results so that they can learn from it. And, you know, every now and again, one bad email isn't necessarily something you can make a conclusion from, but a consistent trend is something that you can make dynamic moves towards fixing. How far in advance are you planning that content for the system to work?
Often 3 months out is when we write that copy. And, you know, one of the really important things we've done is that we've built a submission form for the employees of this company. So if they have really great ideas about what they want in a newsletter, or they kind of have a seasonal one, or if they have a trade show or an event coming up that they want to promote, they're able to submit that. Often what we're working with is a sales team, and there are the people on the ground talking to customers, closing deals. They're the ones who know really what is engaging contacts.
You should also be A/B testing your email subject lines. Think of it as a way to play with language. If it aligns with your brand guidelines, Megan says, feel free to get really creative.
It's always so fun when you're working with a client that has a fairly fun or casual or witty tone in their copy, because it's so easy to reflect that in the headlines. I'm such a huge fan of using emojis in my headlines. I feel like it makes it, I'm talking specifically subject lines and emails, building out a strategy that, or working with a client that allows that in terms of, always test your headlines. It's one of the number one ways to kind of see, make sure people are opening your emails. I've seen read rates increase by over 10% just from making sure I was writing a headline that was engaging. But it makes it stand out, right? You get to be a little bit cheeky. You get to be a little bit fun. It's so much more interesting to get an email that says something like, hey, you, like, interested in a blank? Read on. Then this solution is going to be the most groundbreaking. Like, right? Like, it's so easy to play around with language in a way that is so individually engaging to an audience, and you just hope that their contacts are going to reflect the same and are going to kind of have the same values and as your company's brand guidelines. And that is going to be the good fit lead, is going to be the person who has similar values to what are the values and the brand guidelines of your company.
In terms of like the brand personality, that is exactly what it means. It means like, you know what MailChimp did when they first came out on the marketplace? They did an amazing job of like playing around with the monkey and the logo and the bananas and things like cute little things that monkeys say to create huge buy-in around that brand personality. You see HubSpot doing it a lot, really like leaning into that brand and of fun and of like, this is who we are in the marketplace, and stake your claim, like be that person. I think even if this works, it's a social thing, right? Like if you are that flamboyant friend in the friendship group, you are always that person, and people take you as you are because of your degree of confidence with it. So I think like, I remember when I was coming out and a lot of my friends were coming out as a gay person, and it was like, you know, in my era, that wasn't actually done very often. Everyone wasn't always able to be themselves. And the reason I started telling you the story was because I think what we said at that time was people will accept you the way that you are and the level that you accept of yourself. And I think that's actually true for brands. So if you're like, I'm here, I'm queer, I think that's actually like how people will take you, and they'll be like, yep, that's you. That's exactly right. Right. And I think like that degree of confidence that you can have as a brand to put yourself forwards and be like, this is me, this is who I am as a brand, people buy into that. They get excited about it. So when we do our holiday email series and we're like, yep, we're giddy about Christmas, or here's a Halloween series because we're excited about that too, that I think really does resonate with our audience, or it attracts a certain audience to work with us that is actually a better fit for us too. So when you say like you hope that your audience will actually take to it, I actually think it's the inverse of that. I think you put your flag down and you say, this is us, this is what it's like to work with us, and you will attract those workers, those people, those clients who want to work with you, because you will automatically be on the same page already.
While personality is really important, it's even more important to get your messaging right. So the most powerful thing you can do is show your contacts how your product is a solution for their problems. Doing this well means getting really granular about what those problems they're having are, and that takes some research.
You really got to be in touch with the sales team. You really got to be in touch with the development team. You need to know exactly how that product is working and how, when they're out selling, people are responding to those pain points that they might be having. Another, you can always be doing that research kind of online if there's specific industries and verticals they're in. I love to get on Reddit. I love to get on LinkedIn and kind of research those pain points that potential customers could be having and how you can kind of shift language to be solving those pain points.
What's something that you would search for on Reddit or use forums like that?
So it's an amazing resource where, you know, you don't want to bug a member of the sales team. You can get online and say you're working for a company that's targeting people in the event industry, right? That's who they're selling to. You can immediately go on Reddit, go on LinkedIn, find the LinkedIn groups that are like people who are interested in event management and see the complaints they're having, their gripes, their 10 biggest issues, or Reddit kind of doing the sub search. Event industry biggest problems or biggest issues for organizing an event. And then you can be pulling that information kind of straight from the horse's mouth, right? About what are these issues that people are having? And then targeting that language becomes so much easier because you take the language that's being used in those audiences. And, you know, it's kind of like you get to be a mind reader a little bit, right? Because the issue is, oh, I'm so bummed about registration. It's always so hard to organize. You know, that's an easy soundbite. Bummed about registration? Here's our list of top three solutions.
So you're pushing out experimental content that is aligned with your brand and presents your product as a solution, and data is starting to come in. The next step is to analyze it and see what works. But what metrics are truly meaningful to you at this stage?
Someone's opening your email and is scrolling through it. That's not an engaged contact necessarily, right? Like HubSpot will mark them as engaged. Opening emails is always great. But what you want to see is clicks, right? You want to be driving traffic to your website. You want to be driving traffic to social. You want to be sticking as many CTAs in there as possible. And this is mostly from a HubSpot perspective, again, to see what is resonating with people, where their attention is going. We love to throw videos in. We love to put little social media bits that we're doing in. We love to link to different, one of my favorite one is a featured read. You have a lot of great content on your site, promote it. Make it a little soundbite, stick it in there, link to a featured read, have an emoji of a little library, and then it's gonna be engaging. People are gonna wanna know more about what you, and you're also making use of things that you already have created. You're not creating anything crazy new. You're repurposing content. But yeah, then the really important part of that is you can go in and we can see exactly where people were clicking. So we're driving organic traffic and we know where we're driving organic traffic to. We know what's working and we know what's not. And so I think that's one of the most important parts. You know, we have emails where some of the most successful ones, we have contacts engaging with it 30 plus times. And that's just because we're making sticky emails, right? Where we have emails that are full of different links and CTAs and content that people just want to keep coming back to.
Yeah, that they can trust that I should go in and I should read this because there's going to be something else in here that's more in depth. And I love that the links piece of what you brought up is so important. One, that it's not random, that it's structured and that it has a goal of where you're driving traffic to. Two, that understanding that the content actually lives somewhere else for your, it lives on your website, it lives on your blog, it lives on your landing pages, when you brought up, call to actions. It lives elsewhere. It doesn't live within an email because an email is a dissemination tool. An email is that thing that sends out the message to say, hey, this is new, come and read it, pay attention to me. It's a disruptive force, email. But blog content lives forever. And I think that is what is so fantastic about being able to segment your email into sections like you were describing. You don't have to tell the whole academic story. I mean, I think long form copy in an email can work well. There are some email lists that do that very well. That's why I think the tracking is so important to see what's working for your audience. But if you're a business that has like a platform product, it's probably a good idea to drive the traffic elsewhere and to be like, here's all of our product, here's a product update, or here's a free, or like here's a video explaining this feature. And you get them to vote with their feet in terms of what they're clicking on, gives you a lot more information than you get in a long form email. Now you can get a long form email, scroll depth can tell you a lot about a long form email. And I think there's also different levels of engagement. Like sometimes you just want to see that they're opening it and they're scrolling, and then to know that they're not very interested in product updates because no one clicked on that product update or that wasn't a very interesting product update. But I think there's different levels, there's different degrees of engagement in what you're saying. Like sometimes scroll matters, particularly if you're doing a long form email. But most people are doing short form email with like links to other locations because you really want to see, you want it to be sticky. You want them to go to the blog and then see the landing page and to see the other resources and to really engage with your brand and become informed along the way about, how to work with you or how to understand the opportunity that you're providing.
Yeah, I mean, often I think you're going to get in an email, you're going to get a soundbite of your brand, but there's no way to convey the full extent of what you do as a company in an email. It just would be impossible to read.
And you're not going to see the traffic, right? Like if you're trying to increase your traffic so that you can get conversions, or if you're trying to, like email marketing is still a traffic driver. It's disrupting me on the day to say, hey, remember me, come back to my website so that I can actually track the things that you're interested in. If you just do a long scrolling email, it's hard to understand what it was that they were interested in, unless it's just one subject content and it's me rambling in an email and that's what they came for, which some email lists do that. Again, I think it depends on what it is that you're trying to say. And what are they coming to you for? Is it just one piece of thought leadership once a month? Is that how your brand functions? Or are you more of like a platform company that has lots of things to offer?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing is just making sure you're continuously providing value to your contact base, because it's an agreement, right? It's a handshake where we're allowed to contact you, but the idea is we're allowed to contact you because we provide value to your inbox. And the second you're not doing that anymore, the second your emails are not going to be read. So whatever your audience wants, I think shorter form sound bites, sticky emails is going to be the way to kind of have a better sense of what is providing value. And then maybe if, you do an experiment, you do some testing, and the long form email of rambly thought leadership is absolutely what your contacts are coming for, then absolutely perfect. That's perfect for that email list, but you kind of have to play around to see what is that value.
And we've talked a little bit about this already, but as our inboxes continue to flood with emails from different companies, what is one way companies can make their email marketing stand out? We've mentioned subject line testing. We've mentioned emojis. We've mentioned short emails with lots of links. We've mentioned tracking and testing. Is there anything else you would add to that list?
I think that other thing I said about just constant testing for value. And then again, different media, videos, social media, anything you can fit into an email that, whatever your email provider will let you stick into an email, do it. The other thing I really believe in is mixing up the template of your email. If there's an expectation that every month I'm going to open a beautifully designed email that has, a different template and it's not kind of like the same scroll, that's engaging, that's exciting. And if you have kind of brand guidelines that you can play around with in there, that's a way to provide value to people because it's going to be interesting, it's going to be engaging, it's going to be visually stimulating.
And we've had this debate with some of our internally. We've been like, should we change the template? Should we change the sections? Or should we have consistency? So it's like, there's always going to be this level of product update in the top right hand corner. We're always going to do this. We're always going to whatever the level of consistency is for your sections and your content strategy. Have you felt like there is a best fit approach, or
how many times would you test it before you feel comfortable being like, this is the outcome of that, you know, yes, changing the template works better for this audience, this client, or no, consistency is the rule. Like, would you test it? Would you send 4? Would you send 10? What would you look for that you feel like you could trust the data that you were seeing in terms of like, let's go in this direction with the data that we've learned?
I think minimum 3. If you 3 or 4, if you're seeing consistently that the data is showing that this is something that works or this is something that doesn't work, that's when you're allowed to switch your template. That's when you're allowed to mix things up. And when I'm saying template, I think, you know, keeping segments consistent every month, segments that people like, segments that are getting clicks, you know, if you're seeing like a high click rate for 4+ months, leave it. If you're not, after 4 months, get rid of it. But even just, I'm saying design in terms of like mixing up new images, less stock photos, more things that are consistent to your visual brand, but are interesting, fun, is other ways to do that, right? Because you're going to have different topics, so you're going to need different visual cues to kind of relate back to those topics. So that is something that if you're still testing something and you kind of like, oh, I need one more month to test it before you're allowed to change something, there's other ways to kind of keep it visually stimulating and exciting. And if every month a part of opening that email means it's going to be something that's really beautifully pulled together and a little bit visually different, I think that's always a good thing.
Well, and don't ever underestimate the power of the bent image. Like, the headline says something and the image shouldn't say the same thing as the headline. It should be a complementary message. So, mm-hmm. you know, you see this a lot in clever marketing where it's like, here, you know, we've got a new surprise for you. And then the person's face is in horror because maybe you're trying to make the point that surprises are bad. Right. So you sort of like comparing and contrasting visual imagery with headline can be a really great way to drive engagement because they're having to think about both of them instead of what you see a lot in marketing. A lot of kind of inexperienced marketers, or not inexperienced, but maybe even junior or less educated about what should work, is they'll say, here's the headline and the image should match it. And I actually think that that creates for dull reading and a dull experience. You really want the image to be a contrast or to be a different idea that is bent towards the headline and the message that you ultimately want to give to create that curiosity. A lot of what we've been talking about takes a lot of time. It's what I would categorize as active push marketing, something that you're spending time on now. There's another category of marketing that is called a stagnant or static lead net. Every company should have one or more of these stagnant lead nets because they basically run on autopilot for you. So while you're off doing your active pushes, you still have these things bringing in leads in the background. When you have a stagnant leads net, you can make these things that live out on the internet and that are just working for you as funnels, nurturing those people through those different progressions. So from that first progression of no contact to a contact in the CRM, you might have a blog post that pushes to a CTA. We have that running on a bunch of our blogs where it's like our blogs are targeting a search term. And anybody who's searching for the answer to that question, that search term, comes in and reads the blog, might then also be the same person who benefits from our HubSpot bootcamp, where we help you look at what's happening in your HubSpot and how to get more value out of your license, for example. And that's stagnant. Like, I call it not an active push because it doesn't require human resources every month anymore. So in our process maps, we like to identify, like, what are the things that are out there working for us, like automations just happening and just running on their own and being lead net generators. And I think every company should have some of them. A lot of companies start with just a demo, book your demo. And if you are a platform that generates a lot of interest, you can get away with that, where people want to see how this product works. And if your marketing really describes, like, this product is the solution for me, that can still work. But more often than not, most companies don't have that kind of intrigue that they create with a demo request form. So you need to have some other offerings to spread out across that filter of no contact to contact, contact in the CRM, but not engaging with you and not going towards an open deal. That said, things like the email systematization of the newsletter that you brought up, Meg, is more of an active push. Every month, we have to think about getting that out the door. We have to make sure the content is approved. There are new images that are engaging. We have to be looking at, I mean, on both cases, you have to be looking at what's the performance like and optimizing it on a regular schedule. But at least with the active push, you've got trade shows that you're going to, you've got newsletters that you're having to send, you've got events that you're organizing. Those are all active push campaigns that require human resources to get them out the door. Whereas these stagnant lead nets are there. Maybe stagnant's not the best word for it. Maybe it's static,
but there are these things that kind of live in an automated way. And I think every company needs to know and draw out what both of those things are for your organization and how email marketing is nurturing for both of those lead source generators. Anything you'd add into that, Meg?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it takes out a lot of extra work because a lot of those processes are automated, takes out a little bit of those stagnant lead nets, take out a bit of human error. You know, if you put someone, if someone's in a connect and qualify sequence or in any kind of sequence where it's kind of reconnecting every certain amount of days, it's not a human doing that. And human error where you'd go, oh, I forgot about that client. And it also means you're less likely to have leads drop through the pipeline, right? There's no gaps because you can build it out and you can really visually see, okay, where are the holes in our process, in our funnel? Where is someone not falling into a stagnant lead net or getting like actively marketed or having sales efforts pushed to?
Yeah, because the fact is that there's cracks in everyone's CRM, right? And all of their lead management processes always have gaps. And what we're trying to do with that process map is fill the gaps to be like, okay, people, we do want you to go down these four progressions. We would love it if you came to our website once and bought, but we know that that's not what you're going to do. What you're going to do is come in, get something useful, push us off, and forget about us. And so being able to plan for your leads to forget about you and how you're going to reroute them back to the ideal path is the whole point of doing a process map, so you can index all of your organic traffic efforts as well as who's in your community and how you're talking to them in a way that's going to really create engagement. The nature of business is change. And one thing that we used to be able to rely on for the last 15 years that has now changed again is this concept of the soft sell. It used to be that if you were being helpful and your product came up, that was called the soft sell instead of the hard sell of going directly to say, buy from me, which has been frowned upon for, let's say, 20 years. But now we're seeing that everybody who is even trying to provide something that is of value is coming across as icky. And so now when you get an email from a brand, even a brand that you maybe like, it still feels disruptive, even if they're offering something that's helpful. So how do you still make sure that you're being valuable without alienating your audiences? Because you can't stop yet. I do think that the brands that you're connected to and that you do appreciate, whether you open their emails or not, it's nice to know that they still exist. So even if you're not engaging with the emails, the fact that you're not unsubscribing is probably also decent. And the occasional open email should probably be celebrated and given more kudos than it is. An email click, definitely celebrated. You're really doing something right. The more that you can focus on what it is that your customers really need to really define what your value is, the more that I think you can celebrate and confidently send out emails to your list of people who are engaging in the level of that they haven't unsubscribed, they do want to stay connected to your brand, they're glad your company still exists, even if they're not using you right now. This is important, particularly in the B2B service industry, where you don't always have a case for using somebody's services, but you still want to know that they exist and that they're out there fighting the fight to stay in existence and to stay relevant. So I think the only way that the soft sell still works is if you really know that what you're doing is helpful. It may not be helpful to everybody, and hopefully you can get a more segmented list that grows more and more refined using things like data properties and better segmentation. But in absence of that, if you know that you're out there helping people who have these verified problems, it's useful to know that you do have solutions for if they have that problem later. So what are we going to do about all of this? Here are a couple of takeaways. The first one, give, and don't gate. In the sense of what you have to give away for free is going to engender trust and build your brand right now. So keep looking for ways to give away things. And the less that you can gate, unless it's a really high value ticket item, you're going to have to assess what you gate at this point in time. The purpose of gating was always for lead generation, but if leads don't feel like leads anymore, that they don't want to be treated as leads, you have to give away a lot more in order to make them feel like they can trust your brand. The gating piece should be seen as very transparently only something that is going to be necessary for you to follow up with them insofar as they have a need that requires follow-up. I think we have to really show that we are other-centered in our marketing. What can you help with? If you're giving away so much information that is helpful, I think that you need to understand and do a bit of an audit on what it is that you can do that is helpful. So doing an index of the things that you have is essential right now. Once you know what you have to give away that's valuable, you can rank those on a priority. Is a lead going to see this and feel like a lead and be grateful that I'm going to nurture them if they get this help from me? And if I gate them and let them know, hey, you're a lead in my system now and I'm going to nurture you to give you more information that's helpful. How do we define helpful? Without an index of what it is that you can help with, it's very, very tricky for a sales and marketing team to actually deliver in a way that's meaningful for the end user. We need to think about how we're helping people for free. That might not be something that you've done previously, but it can make the difference of why you stand out and why people remember you now. So this index about brand and value and help, all this stuff that you're going to index is going to be really focused on that person you're trying to sell to, really focused on a day in their life and what makes their lives more difficult. And of course, you have to be careful not to call their baby ugly and be mentioning things that are going to stress them out. Sometimes that's going to happen inadvertently, but I think if you think this would create relief in this person, this would make them feel taken care of, this would make them feel seen, those are the kinds of things going to really help you win. Sales and the sales process are not going away. In fact, they're getting elongated. And that's the case. We know it. We can just plan for it and try to do the activities that are going to help us be more successful. There's a lot less fear when we feel organized, we feel like we can help people, and we know that, yeah, it is going to still be a numbers game of how many leads go through to conversion, but we're prepared for that now, and we're prepared for a longer sales cycle, and we know how we're still going to win, which means we can win, and we can feel good about what we're doing so that we are not being seen as spam, but we are out there grinding away, trying to help people who are going to really appreciate it.
Find more episodes of the Company Growth Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you've got a company growth story you'd like to share, reach out to Tangible Words. We'd love to hear your story and use it to inspire others to beat their own company growing pains. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Company Growth Podcast.